Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. What's going on, everybody? You got Mark here from the Negotiations Ninja podcast. Today, a little throwback to a conversation that I had with the great and powerful Chris Voss, where we start talking about all things negotiation, specifically around his book, Never Split the Difference, which is fantastic. If you haven't read it yet, I highly recommend that you do. Amazing wisdom by Mr. Chris Voss. Enjoy this great episode. Chris Voss, how are you?
Mark, I'm great, man. I'm doing really good. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, such a pleasure to have you on the show, man.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, as a huge negotiation fan and as a fan of your book, and I'm sure my listeners have read your book as well, I'm very, very excited to get into it because what you've written about is very counter to what a lot of quote-unquote negotiation experts say about negotiation. And I love that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
The thing that I love the most about it is that it's almost like a 180-degree turn away from what we would consider to be, what's the best way to put it, theoretical knowledge on negotiation. Really dives into what works, what doesn't work, and you don't beat around the bush about it. It's straight to the goods.
Yeah, you know, very true. Nicely perceived. And I kind of got a kick out of you saying it's a 180-degree turnaround. We used to joke in the FBI, we had some good old boys from down south that'd say, we're going to turn this thing around 360 degrees. And we'd say, wait a minute, hold on, wait a minute. We do that, where do we end up?
Awesome. Well, listen, hey, for the listeners that don't know about you or about Never Split the Difference, maybe you could tell us about you, Never Split the Difference, and maybe a bit about Black Swan as well.
Yeah, well, I'm a retired hostage negotiator. I was the FBI's lead international kidnapping negotiator. Was with the FBI for a total of 24 years. 15 of the last 24, my career was focused on hostage negotiation. Took that route through Harvard Law School's program on negotiation to try to get our stuff better and ended up collaborating with those guys and deciding that we were doing exactly the same thing, just stakes were a little bit different. But it was the same ideas and the same aspects of human behavior. Started teaching business negotiation in a couple of different business schools when I left the FBI and put Never Split the Difference out based on, you know, our experiences making hostage negotiation work in the business world and having, you know, our MBA students just hit home run after home run with the stuff that we taught them how to do. And now our clients hit home runs on a regular basis.
Awesome. And that's the work that you're doing with Black Swan right now, essentially, right?
Yeah, that's what Black Swan does now. We're all completely focused on business negotiations, some personal negotiations, but 1,000% focused on it. Got a superstar team around me. You know, you want to go fast, go alone. You want to go far, go as a team. And I got a great team and we're helping people have better lives. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, you've made a significant difference with the book. It certainly sort of turned the negotiation world on its head. This is what I love about your book. Most negotiation experts would suggest that, you know, to get to a close, we should be getting little yeses throughout the negotiation, whereas you suggest that getting a no at the beginning of the negotiation is critical. Why is that?
Yeah, you know, not only at the beginning, but throughout. I mean, this little yeses stuff is just so bad. I mean, it's just so taught out there. And what we see, the little yeses stuff, and some people refer to that as tie downs or commitments, which is a complete violation of basic human nature. I mean, you get tied down, eventually you're going to rebel. I think it's the number one contributor to long negotiations that go nowhere. You know, there's a saying that it's not a sin to not get the deal. What the sin is to take a long time to not get the deal.
Right.
And it's also, it's the biggest toxin corrosion for relationships when people stop responding to you entirely. Like if you've got any non-responders, you're a yes addict and they're tired of being trapped by your yeses. Are you trying these tie downs? And even if you're not intending to do that, there are so many other charlatans out there that that is their sole focus and their approach. We as human beings are battered by yes, so that we can't help but instinctively react negatively as soon as somebody tries to get us to say yes. You know, we think, where's this going? What's the trap? What's the hook? It's just such a problem. And we get people out of that right away. It's just a corrosion.
So when you're getting someone to a no, why is it important for them to feel or to say that no? You mentioned something about control in the book. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, people feel protected and safe when they say no. You know, there's misunderstanding of parent-child negotiations. People like to say wrongly that kids are good at negotiating with parents because they don't take no for an answer. No, it's a human being to human being response, and kids as human beings learn that their parents, having said no, are more likely to listen once they feel safe and protected. I mean, when my director of operations now is my son and an exceptionally talented negotiation coach. When he was 17, he'd say, "Dad, can I?" And I'd say, "No." And I'd say that before he'd even finish the sentence. But then I'd say, having said no and feeling protected, then I'd say, "All right, so what was it that you wanted?" And I'd be willing to listen. And we just, like, as a company, our attitude is, if that's human nature, then ignore human nature at your peril. Let's take advantage of it. Let's use no to make people feel safe and protected and move forward, because nobody can ever just say no to a deal. Like, instead of saying, "Do you agree?" we say, "Do you disagree?" And people will say, "No, I don't disagree, but here's the problem." Boom, 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 boom. And then they lay it right out. That happens every single time you trigger a no. It's never no by itself. It's always no and. And what you really need to get at all times in terms of implementation, protecting the relationship, long-term prosperity, is to get to what comes after and. And they're much more likely to give you the information after and after having said no than they are after having said yes.
Interesting. And so that speaks to where you spoke about people having two needs, one to be understood and two to be accepted. So why is it that you think that we have these needs? And do you think that our ability to say no and then explain why we're saying no is our need to be understood and accepted?
Well, you know, these are safety issues. The caveman brain, which is in all of us, regardless of gender or ethnicity. The cavemen that survived were a little more cautious. The ones that were less cautious kept wandering into caves and getting eaten by saber-toothed tigers. So there's a genetic thing. And there's no shortage of neuroscience that backs this up. Nobel Prize-winning prospect theory from 2002 with Daniel Kahneman, even before the neuroscience backed it all up, said that our primary driver of human behavior is fear of loss. Not the only driver, just a primary driver. That's from the caveman days, fear of getting eaten, fear of loss, fear of dying. Those were the cavemen that survived. There's nothing we can do, no matter how much we learn on the internet, that's going to change that basic amygdala wiring that's in everybody's brain. So these are the things that are wired into human nature that have not changed in 8,000 years or longer. It's not going to change. So let's take advantage of it. Feeling safe and secure and protected is what moves people forward. 70% of buy decisions are made based on avoidance of loss. So let's understand this. And then if we know it to be true, let's stop trying to get people to say yes. Let's give them the opportunity to tell us the truth in a negotiation and find out early on whether or not there's a deal to be had.
Yeah, I find the research around Kahneman and Tversky's work around framing loss versus reward very, very interesting, and how they found that people respond way more positively to your request if you frame it as a loss versus as you frame it as a reward.
Right, and that's utterly insane. You can pose the exact same proposition, one as, "Would you like to make money?" And or flip it around and say, "Do nothing and lose."
Yeah.
And it'll make a massive difference in how people respond. And it can be the exact same proposition. It's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. So one of the things that I found super fun and interesting in your book was when you got into some of the nitty-gritty around actual hostage negotiations and you started talking about the late-night DJ voice. Everyone loves the late-night DJ voice when they hear about it. So what is the late-night DJ voice and why is it so effective?
Well, it's a calming, smoothing, downward inflecting voice. And, you know, we stumbled over this in hostage negotiation back in the 1970s and in my suicide hotline days in the 1990s. And we didn't know why it worked. We just knew it worked. And it's the main reason why that hostage negotiators do not have terrorists and kidnappers yelling at us as much as business people have. I mean, business people have far more shouting matches in their negotiations than hostage negotiators ever encounter. We have an individual that's helping us with restructuring our business now so that we can expand and move forward. And he was telling us about being on the phone with one of his contractors the other day and that she was screaming at him. Nobody screams at us because we talk at people with the late night FM DJ voice. And after we invented it, again, I refer to neuroscience, what makes it work? Neuroscience has discovered that there are neurons on our brain called mirror neurons that pick up the affect that they hear and then immediately trigger that emotion inside the brain. So it's an involuntary response. I can reach into your brain and I can flip the mirror neurons. There's nothing you can do about it. If you can hear me or if you can see me, then with my late night FM DJ voice, what I'm actually doing is turning your brain down. I'm turning the emotions, the negative emotions down. Now you can fight it. You can consciously fight it, but you can't stop the fact that it's happening. Or I can reach in with my tone of voice and I can smile. And if you can hear me, if you can see me, there's an unconscious neuroscience response. The brain kicks in chemicals as a result of those mirror neurons being triggered. Now, the even crazier thing about that is neuroscience is also telling us now that we're up to 31% more mentally capable in a positive frame of mind. So with my tone of voice, I can reach in and I can change your mood and I can change your brain function. And you can fight it, but you can't stop that it occurred.
Super interesting. So I think one of the common misconceptions that I hear about when people talk about the late night DJ voice is they're thinking, well, then you're not really being direct or assertive. But it seems to me that that's actually the opposite. That's when you are most direct and most assertive.
Yeah, it's critical when you are the most direct and assertive. I mean, Bob Manukin wrote this great book. He was the head of the program on negotiation. I talk about him at the beginning of my book. He wrote a book called Beyond Winning. And it's principally a negotiation book for attorneys because he's at Harvard Law School. So what's he going to write? He's going to write books for attorneys. But the first chapter in that is about empathy. It's a brilliant chapter, and it's called The Tension Between Empathy and Assertiveness. I can remember looking at that chapter title thinking like, wait a minute, I thought Bob believed in empathy. Why is he writing that there's a tension between them? And then I got into reading the chapter, and I realized, ah, this is a red herring. He meant to catch people off guard. Because he goes on to say there is no tension and that empathy is required for assertiveness. If you're going to be a good negotiator, if you're going to be in sales, you're going to be in procurement, if you're going to do any negotiation, you have to be assertive on behalf of your best interests. It's just you don't want to be a jerk about it. So use empathy or use a late night FM DJ voice so that you can put forward your best interests effectively. The other side's never going to give you a great deal if they have no idea what you need. How can they do that?
Yeah. One of the major failings I see in a lot of maybe the in-house training that procurement and salespeople get is that, you know, many negotiation instructors will say something like, oh, you need to separate emotion and empathy from the negotiation. And just seems to be so counter to what you're saying. You seem to favor using emotion to your advantage. But I think what you're saying is, you need to be in control, obviously, of your own emotions, and you need to empathize with the other party during that process. How do you use emotion to your advantage in negotiations?
Yeah, you know, there's some really interesting ideas all sort of rolled into there. And I think a lot of this separate people from the emotions that came from intellectually sound, but irrationally applied. You know, we want to be intellectually sound. The Harvard guys wanted us to be intellectually inassailable. And this is before we completely understood how the brain works. We used to think that you could be dispassionate. We used to think that emotions were something you could turn off and on. And we now know from looking in the brain and seeing that emotions are hardwired into all decision-making. We make our decisions based on what we care about. That makes decision, by definition, an emotional process, what you care about, how you weigh things out. And there's no shortage of neuroscience that has continued to back it up and actually shows that without emotions, you can't make decisions. And they've actually demonstrated that. You can follow instructions, but you can't make decisions. So if you want the other side to make a decision, their emotions are going to have to be engaged. All right, so now let's break them down a little bit. Negative emotions slow down our thinking and send us down the wrong path. Positive emotions make us smarter. So it's not that emotions are bad, it's understanding how they influence decision-making. And that we want to enhance positive emotions, we want to do what we can to eliminate negative emotions. And that's when you begin to take a very tactical approach. Which emotions do I like? And which are hurting me? And now let me sort of separate these out and try to put the person onto a different path of decision-making. I was kind of all over the place with that. I apologize.
No. I think that totally makes sense. You know what? I think one of the things that a lot of people get pretty confused about is that's probably why people get confused about the little yeses, because we equate yes with a positive emotion. But that's not necessarily true, because when you can give someone the control of saying no, that's when you're creating the positive emotion in their mind that they have the control of the negotiation.
Yeah, and to just drill down on that point for a second, on each word depends upon which side of it you're on as to how it feels to you. So when we hear yes, we get a little shot of dopamine. I mean, we get a nice little hit. We're happy. Hearing yes makes us happy. And we forget how uncomfortable we're made to feel when somebody tries to get us to say yes. Like, nobody reacts positively to picking up a phone and hearing a voice on the other end say, "Have you got a few minutes to talk?" I've given keynotes around the United States and a lot of countries outside the United States. And I say, how many people of you, when you hear the voice on the other end of the phone say, "Have you got a few minutes to talk?" how do you react? And half the people will outright say, "No." You know, nobody likes that.
Yeah.
I don't have anybody in any crowd jump up and say, "Yeah, I love it when I hear that voice." And I say immediately to them, "Thank God you called." Everybody reacts negatively to that. And we assume that it's just that question in that context, but you can run your own experiments. Look around you and see if anybody can react with a clean, clear, crisp, precise yes to anything.
Very interesting. And so a different way to ask that question would be, maybe, did I catch you at a bad time?
That's a great way. I mean, we love, like, nobody that works for me, and hopefully nobody we've trained ever says, "Have you got a few minutes to talk?" We usually say, "Did I catch you at a bad time? Is now a bad time?" Another one that we really like is, "Have I caught you in the middle of something?" Because it immediately returns control to the person on the other end of the line. And having been given control, they're more likely to stay on with you in an uncluttered frame of mind.
Interesting. Let's get to the title of the book. Why should you never split the difference?
Oh, God. Compromise and splitting the difference is so horrible. I mean, it is just so bad. I can give you example after example after example where compromise has just ruined everything. So, and splitting the difference is a result of one or two things. People are trying to compromise to be fair, or there's also an old saying, be careful of the person who wants to meet you halfway. They're often a poor judge of distance.
I love that.
Yeah, you know, so the flip side is, people who most often walk up to me and say, "You know, I like win-win and I like splitting the difference." And I will almost always find that that person is a high anchor, high demand, extreme anchor person. And all they're doing is moving the goal line. Mm. They have no intention of giving in whatsoever. If they want to pay $100 for something, they'll offer to pay $50 and let the other person beat them back to $100 that they intended to pay all along, or vice versa. It is a mercenary. Splitting the difference is a mercenary's tool to make you feel like you got treated fairly when they got what they wanted all along.
And fairness is really perception more than anything else, it seems.
Yeah. It's amazing what people will agree to if they feel they've been treated fairly. And it's also shocking what they'll refuse to agree to if they'll feel it was unfair. We were in the middle a number of years ago of a potential opportunity that I would have gotten $500,000, and the person that set it up theoretically would have gotten $800,000 for it. Now, it would have taken me a year to get my half mil. And the other person, if they just arranged one meeting that led to a deal, arguably they'd have worked for 3-4 hours to get $800,000. And I was insulted by that. "No, I'm not doing that. That's not fair." And then afterwards, I was thinking, like, now, wait a minute. Before this opportunity came up, I'd have been pretty happy with $500,000 for a year's worth of work. I'd have thought that was a pretty good year. But just because of what somebody else got compensated that had no effect whatsoever on how much money I took home, took me from being delighted to disgusted, the exact same deal.
Interesting.
And I remember when that realization swept over me in that deal, because I was teaching about fairness in the MBA program at Georgetown at the time, I thought, you know what, I teach this stuff, and I still fell victim to this whole fairness nonsense. It's insane the way you can reframe people's thinking with the F word.
And that's why I think so many good salespeople use, "Does that sound fair?"
Yeah, they're trying so hard. I mean, that could be very genuinely meant. I mean, they could do that with the most intended respect and appreciation and the desire to treat the other person gently. And that is just going to backfire. Because does that sound fair? There's so many problems with that question. First of all, it's yes oriented, so it's a trap. Number two, you're using the F word, which is going to hit people in an emotionally way that's going to make them uncomfortable. I mean, it seems like such a respectful thing to say, and it's so problematic.
Yeah, exactly. You spoke a little bit there about anchoring. What is extreme anchoring, and why is it so powerful?
Well, you know, anchoring is strongly advocated by almost all of my academic brethren. Go first and go high, because it does change the perception of the viable deal. The zone of possible agreement, as my intellectual brothers and sisters at Harvard would say. It does move the zone. The real problem with high anchoring is it also makes deals go away that you otherwise should have made. So, and we see this on a regular basis because, you know, my company, we negotiate on our behalf on a regular basis. Negotiation after negotiation. We are not on a government contract. We are not on anybody's contract. We eat what we kill every day. And we kill a lot, and we will not high anchor. We will not go first. And our long-term take is much more as a result of that. We make more deals. Our deal velocity is higher. If you high anchor, you hit the occasional home run, but you don't get up to bat as much, or the other side stops pitching to you. High anchoring is a really great way to make potential deals vanish. And each and every time that I have made the mistake of high anchoring as a result of, every now and then somebody lured me into it, and I regret it each and every time because it makes deals go away. It does make the deals that you do make, those that survive, will be a much better deal for you. That deal will. Short-term gain is very good. Long-term loss is very high. And it's until you see it play out over a number of years, by the time you realize that high anchoring is killing your business, it's probably too late.
Yeah, and the volume goes down. Yep. Interesting. Super interesting. In the book, you speak about calibrated how questions when you're trying to get additional information from someone on the other side of the table. What is a how question and what is a calibrated how question?
We calibrate everything for effect. I mean, every single word you choose has an emotional effect. And if you don't know the emotional effect, then you're firing a weapon without knowing what you're hitting. So we took our old list of open-ended questions or interrogative questions, you know, the reporter's questions, when, where, why, and how, and we're going to calibrate them down for effect. You know, Jim Camp, the author of Start With No calls them interrogatives, and the FBI, we called them open-ended. People love to be asked what and how. I mean, the secret to gaining the upper hand is giving the other side the illusion of control. And we want the upper hand. We want you to feel in control. And you're going to feel in control if I ask you, how should we do something? Or what do you want to do? Or how do you want to proceed? Or what are the next steps? We love how and what because they are the most deferential ways to move things forward and make the other side feel much more comfortable if they're going to respond positively to questions. Now, there's a secondary issue of whether or not they're going to respond positively to questions at all, no matter how well calibrated they are. And that's a whole separate thing that we teach, because questions may not be the best way to gather information. But if you're going to gather information via a question, your how or what question are probably your best choices.
Interesting. And so when someone tells you how and gives you that next step, we're often prompted to say, I think just by human nature, you're right, as opposed to that's right. And those two situations seem to be very, very different, because when we say you're right, it sounds like from what you're saying in your book, we're giving credibility to the person versus the idea. Maybe you can expand on that for me.
Yeah, you know, you're really hitting the nuances of that too. I got to tell you, that's an impressive grasp of those nuances. And it's separating out, you know, what you're satisfying, the person or the idea, and which side of this that we're on. You're right is the most famously used phrase to get your counterpart to stop talking, to shut up, to be happy, to leave you alone. Hearing it is almost more satisfying than hearing yes. If there's anything we love hearing more than yes, it's we love having somebody look at us and go, you're right. And we shut up, we're ecstatic, we go away. And all of us practice that. All of us, when we're being bothered by someone we have no intention of collaborating with, no intention of implementing with, no intention of moving forward with, we look at them, we say, you're right. They shut up and they leave us alone. We go back to what we were doing. Probably the single biggest problem of false agreement in not just business interactions, but personal interactions. Now, again, which side of it are you on? You get a tremendous amount of satisfaction of hearing that's right. but it's what human beings say when we are all in. I mean, when we are completely in agreement with what we've heard. And that's the best sign of complete and total agreement and establishment of agreement on a deeper human being level. That's what we want to hear. That's what we should strive to hear. I mean, it's the single biggest breakthrough moments in negotiations, whether it's a hostage negotiation or business negotiation, is when we have triggered a that's right out of the other side and we are solid gold in what we want when we get that.
If you could, thinking back on your career and where you were maybe when you were 30, if you could give your younger self some advice on negotiation, what would it be?
Let us take a journey down memory lane, shall we? Right, Mark? Shall we? Now that we're older and wiser, theoretically, let's go back to the young 30-year-old Christopher Voss when he was busy clubbing people with righteous indignation. Can we go back and we shoot that guy with a tranquilizer just a little bit, right? I'd say be nicer. Don't compromise on any things you were trying to get done. Just be as assertive as you always were. Just be nicer about it. If I could go back and change anything, that would be the one thing that I would change. I remember one of my hostage negotiation brothers once telling me, dealing with you is like getting hit in the face with a brick. And I'd be like, all right, so if I go back over it, I equated niceness to weakness. You know, I wanted people to respect me. I was a classic assertive. You know, you may not like me, but you're going to respect me. You're going to know where I'm coming from. I would go back and I would be just as assertive. I just wouldn't be blunt about it. There's a difference between somebody who's assertive, which dealing with them is like getting hit in the face with a brick, to the other person who's a straight shooter. I live in Los Angeles these days, and a person I'm blown away that I've gotten to know, this lady named Cindy Morey, and she has been Oprah's booker for 19 years. She has booked in all the talent on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and she has dealt with the most difficult personalities out there. And she told me that her reputation in the industry was that she's a straight shooter, which means she tells people the truth, but in an emotionally intelligent way. And people love dealing with her. You want to be a straight shooter. You don't want to be a blunt force brick that people have to fend off.
That's really good advice. I think so often, especially on the procurement side of things, where we're trained to be cold and data-driven and analytical and separate emotion from the deal and just look at the numbers and all that kind of stuff, that so often we forget about actually being a decent human being.
Yeah, and you know, you're just not going to make the deals either as many as you should have made or as good as you should have made. Because we get back to this neuroscience stuff, if we're cold, if we're distant, it's going to infect the other side. They're going to be less emotional, which means they're not going to be as smart. There's really solid data out there that when we're in a positive frame of mind, we're 31% smarter. Salespeople make 37% more deals in a positive frame of mind. You will leave money on the table if you're striving for neutral.
Super interesting. Awesome. Chris, if you're going to leave the listeners with a couple of tips on things that you think they absolutely must know about negotiation, what would they be?
Yeah, you know, don't take yourself hostage, which means you're afraid to let the other side speak. You're afraid to hear the word no. You're hostage to yes. Let the other side talk first. Don't be afraid to hear them out. If you're afraid to hear them out, then you're taking yourself hostage. Don't take yourself hostage.
Such good advice.
And then you're going to make more deals. Just stop taking yourself hostage.
Yeah, really, really good. Chris, I have enjoyed the conversation that we've had today thoroughly, man. Thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Mark. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. And if people want to find out more about Never Split the Difference or more about what Black Swan is up to, how do they do that?
The gateway to everything that we're doing is our newsletter. It comes out once a week. It's short and sweet. It's free. It's complimentary. It's good price. And a lot of people keep on their game because negotiation is a perishable skill. So they keep on their game by reading this weekly as a supplement to the book and whatever else. And it's also the gateway to our website. It's a gateway to everything else that we do, free training stuff out there. We've got a whole variety of stuff. So the best way to subscribe to the newsletter, and it's called The Edge, is to text FBI Empathy, all one word, text that message. Don't let your spell check make it two words. Send FBI Empathy, all one word, to the number 22828. That number again is 22828. you get a text back to sign up for the Edge. That is the best way to help us keep you on top of your game so you can get more, you can make better deals, build a better life for your family.
Awesome. Love it. And for the listeners, just so that you know, I'm going to link out to all of Chris's resources on the show notes as well. So you'll have access to find out where to buy the book, find out where his website is. I'll also link out to the newsletter as well so that you have that. But make sure that you stay on top of what Chris is up to, because I anticipate, hopefully, that he'll be coming out with another book at some point in time. Chris, don't leave me hanging. Is that true?
We got more training that we're coming out. We're working on more training material that we're putting out. We got a summary book we're getting ready to put out.
Yes.
We got a lot of stuff in the pipeline.
Awesome. Love it. Again, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. It was a great pleasure. For the listeners, please reach out to me if you have any questions. Chris is online. He's on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. He's all over the place on social media. So again, Chris, thanks so much and have a great day. Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.